All right, Dagogo, how's your week?
Yeah, not too bad. Just working on quite a few videos.
Yeah, so stuff's coming out left, right, and center.
There's a lot of stuff coming.
People scamming left, right, and center.
Yeah, as usual. So the last video uploaded was on the good old JP Morgan fraud by one Charlie Javis. There was two things that were very interesting about it. And I guess for those of you who don't know, Charlie Javis came up with this plan or a company that was supposed to make the application process for getting student loans a lot easier than the government process. And she said she had 4.5 million users. And obviously that's a huge thing for a financial business of any kind. So JP Morgan was very interested, and she pitched herself as saying that this is the perfect product. Like, we know all the details about all our customers and very good data on them, so, you know, you'll get a good return. JP Morgan said, okay, sure. So they bought it for $175 million. And essentially, she lied about the whole thing. The actual list that she got JP Morgan and gave it to them was actually faked. So she had less than 300,000 people. So when JP Morgan sent out the initial emails to get people to sign up, only 20% of the mails actually delivered, so the other 80% was fake, and only 1% replied in the end. So it ended up being a huge scandal, and this was within a matter of months that she'd sent it off and then got caught because, yeah. So on the one hand, it was kind of like JP Morgan just didn't look deep enough. That was, like, shocking. And on the other hand, how did she think she was going to get away with it? Like, obviously, there's this client list that you give to someone. They're going to check it. They're going to see if it's actually real. Like, it was crazy.
I mean, first of all, those who haven't watched it, do go to the Cold Fusion YouTube channel and check out the video. It's about this woman, 31-year-old woman who scammed JP Morgan for $175 million, basically. But overall, I think the first part of your question is, you know, how did she think she was going to get away with it? I think overall, I think it's actually way more common than we think, this whole faking it till you make it kind of stuff, especially in the startup industry, startup circuit. Maybe not to that level, but then the fact that she got help from this, you know, creative solutions dude and paid that person $18,000 to fake the entire thing tells me that he does this for more than one client, or at least, you know, has other people that are on the same area with similar kind of requests. So
I guess that's true. See, he must do it for others, but I don't know. I think just on the surface, like, anyone would be sweating. They'll be like, how could I possibly get away with this? And to think that it would work and to actually go through with the deal, I think that's...
I think some people just have that, you know, just this complete disregard for any sort of consequence and think that, you know, you could just do whatever you want and get away with it. Mm-hmm. And she is one of those people, and it just seems like it's not very uncommon either. Like, if you look at other stories as well in different areas, you see similar kind of tendencies with similar personalities, right? Mm-hmm. Just yesterday I was watching this news bit about this woman who wrote a book. Did you see that story? So for those who don't know, she wrote it. What was it? A child's book?
Yeah.
About it was a grieving?
Yeah. Children's book about grief. And she came up with the idea after the loss of her husband and obviously her children's father, and was saying there's nothing out there that covered this topic, so we should write a book. And then it later came out that she killed the husband. So,
yeah, or she's, I mean, accused, at least she's accused of it. Yeah, allegedly. So I think that in itself, the fact that she was going around doing interviews and appearing on TV, just telling her how she really needed something to grieve about, and then writes a children's book about it. And then she appears to be the prime suspect for her husband's murder.
I think that should be studied. Like, There's a sociopath, yes, but then this seems to be like some other level about that. There's some other...
And I think, again, these kind of tendencies where individuals who don't care, you know, it's, I think, different people in different part of that spectrum, but obviously there's this murderous stuff, and then you've got the fraudulent stuff. But I think there's some sort of connection between the way they think that, you know, there's no disregard. Sorry, there is, no disregard about any... Oh, sorry, there's no... regard about any consequences of their wrongdoings. Two other things I want to bring up about that video. I think one was specifically about how she was also a Forbes 30 under 30. Mm-hmm. More often than not, we've seen Forbes listing people who, you know, end up in an orange jumpsuit, as you know, mentioned in the video. But also, it just seems like there's a trend of those certain people showing up in these lists as well as a way to almost mask that side of them and just appear to be more credible. Mm. And Forbes just seems to be, or at least the list seems to be one of those ways to get it.
So I imagine at some time that Forbes list used to mean something, as in if you were on it, people were like, oh, wow, like there's no reason to question anything. But I think Theranos was the first to kind of break that mold. And then there's
the thing is, you know, it's probably a very small percentage. Don't get me wrong. I know actually people personally who are on Forbes 30 under 30, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them have done really great work, especially in the South Asian kind of community. But then obviously there are people like this.
But the thing is, they have so much publicity, it taints the whole thing. So
yeah, and I think initially, you're right. I think initially just being anything 30 under 30 felt like, oh, you know, this is a big thing. It's a credible thing. But I think that slowly changed to Forbes 30 under 30 list being something more of a potential rather than something that's established.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of these names started just appearing on this list without any concrete endpoint. And therefore, you get these bad apples here.
I think that's one aspect. But I think the other aspect, which probably has bigger weight, is the fact that people can pay to get on this.
I didn't know about that. I don't think... Is that confirmed?
I've heard it a lot of places, so maybe don't quote me.
So from
me on
what
that.
I know, that you can't actually... You can pay to appear on Forbes, which is the news site, or at least because there's two versions of Forbes. One is the more credible news agency, and the other version is the columnists and the opinion pieces that go there. And I know for a fact you can pay to get your name out there on those articles to boost up your SEO and whatnot, right? But as for appearing on 30 and a 30, what I understand, and in fact what I know for sure, is that you need to apply, first of all. So you apply in this open form that happens every year. And then there's someone who's already won it in the past need to refer you. So you need to have somebody who has been on the list before to actually vouch for you to have some sort of additional credibility.
Okay.
So you need to build like a broader network even before applying.
Right.
And then after you get picked, I don't know if you need to pay, but I'm pretty certain you don't need to pay to get on.
Well, there you go. So yeah, that's interesting, because I guess the fake it till you make it thing ends up being, you're building, I guess, a house of lies, but everything is built on another lie. So basically, you lie your way to the first company. That company sells off, something goes wrong, but you don't tell anyone, but you just kind of say, oh, it went well. And then you get someone who's interested, and then that person can vouch for you and tell others, and then it kind of builds. But it's all a lie.
Yeah, even before the Theranos and Charlie Jefferson and whatnot, there were... because they've been doing it for so long, these lists, I used to just check up on, what's happened to that person who was on the 30 and 30, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And there was actually an article that I came across. I haven't seen it recently. I'll have to look it up. But basically saying what happened to them kind of thing. And a lot of those, companies or individuals would either, go bust or didn't really succeed. So again, that goes with that angle that they stopped going for people that were established, and more so of people who are just about to use that as a launch pad, right? But the other thing I want to talk to you about was, you mentioned something about being millennials and their way of scamming, right? And you kind of, got yourself in a way that, I'm a millennial myself, so it's no shade, but you mentioned specifically there's something about millennials being very interesting in the way they scam. I want you to dig deep on
here
that statement.
Well, I think it may not be... See, the thing with videos and when I talk and have an opinion, it's like a couple of sentences, because I don't want to harp on about something that's not central. So what I was thinking is, on the other side, it may not be millennials' fault. Right. So the premise is, the millennials that you see, from Do Kwon to Elizabeth Holmes and whatever, they're in the hundreds of millions to billion dollar frauds, right? Mm-hmm. And they're so common that it happens every six to 12 months kind of thing. But I'm saying that in 10, 15, 20 years ago, you wouldn't see this kind of thing happening so often and at such a massive scale. And I'm not saying it's millennials' fault, but one of the reasons could be there's just so much more money sloshing around out there. Mm. There's a lot of access to the internet to be able to facilitate these frauds easier than ever before. So just because millennials are doing it doesn't necessarily mean they're bad people. Mm. There's also the trophy generation and stuff like that, what's his face and trophies. But maybe that's a small component. But I think it's just the environment mixed with just bad actors. But it just ends up the result, millennials are just doing it a lot more. So maybe makes that clarifies sense. Things.
Yeah. I guess what you mean in general terms. But I guess the mentioning of a specific generation, I think that's where some of the comments were like, oh, you know, just there's nothing about millennials specifically, because you'll get
okay that well kind of stuff. I guess digging deeper into it, I think we do have a little bit of entitlement. A little bit of entitlement as a generation. And look, we've gone through a lot. We were in the shadow of forever wars and economic crises and all of this kind of stuff, but I think that the very early years of the millennial generation with the helicopter parenting, there's books written about that. Another talk called The Coddling of America, this American focus thing. But just the differences between the Generation X and the latchkey kids who would have no parents or divorced parents and come home and do everything themselves versus helicopter parenting that came about in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I think there was a effect that is, you know, that has actually overshadowed our generation. But it's subtle, maybe not talked about, but it's just my opinion. I think. Sure. I think that's just.
Yeah. I think you're right with the entitlement stuff, but I think that's also a byproduct of generations prior.
Yeah, I'm not saying the blame is solely on millennials. Yes. I think boomers screwed up. They were the worst. They screwed up a lot of things for a lot of people.
Because when you're saying that, you know, when we look at this stuff, it seems like millennials are doing way more, and there seems to be a lot more of these individuals in that specific generation. But that's partly because the generation before were probably a bit more cautious in getting caught. They're probably the ones running the big banks.
That's true. That's true as well. So let's put it this way: every generation has something to
exactly.
We're just good at savvy scamming. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. And social media has just been you know, helpful. That's all.
Yeah.
But I totally get what you meant there. I think it's just all of it has just enabled the specific generation at this point in time. If it was somebody else, then they would have gotten the same kind of, I guess, advantages, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Anything else you kind of watched want to talk about before we jump into the main topics?
Okay. Well, there's the Google I.O. stuff, but we're going to talk about that a lot.
Definitely the
one. But this is something a bit random, but you know that famous guitar riff, Smoke on the Water?
The one that everybody plays when you go and test a guitar in the music store.
Because it's just two open strings, fret like that. But apparently that started as a sound check for the band Deep Purple. So I think they were in some Spanish country or something, and they went to this recording studio, but then, or was it a gig? I think it was a gig. And then as they were playing, there was some guy that lit a fire flare, like one of those emergency flares, and it burnt the whole place down. So everyone had to evacuate and whatnot. And then so later on, they went to a recording studio in the same city, and they were thinking about what to play, and then they were doing the sound check, and they're like, you know, they had six songs on the album. They needed a seventh. They're like, why don't we tell the story of what just happened? Like, that would be pretty interesting. So they started playing that sound check jam, and then they just came up with the lyrics of what happened. And that's literally the song. So
interesting. So it makes sense that it's a sound check for so many guitars.
What do you think? It's just like, it's kind
it's
of
meant
like,
to be.
Yeah, no, but it's like the way it's set up, it kind of, you would figure it out just, you know, open strings and playing around. So it's kind of.
Do you have a specific song that you play once you've tuned your guitar? Like, just check.
Yeah, it's actually this YouTuber. I can't remember his name. It's like 10 years ago I figured out the song, but it's kind of like one of those like classical pieces, but it tests like intonation very well. So I use that.
Oh, interesting. Okay, moving on to one of the, probably the biggest story this week, but you know, this is a Google I.O. But before that, I actually had a question written for you, or just, you know, in general to discuss a few weeks ago. Never really got a chance to ask it. But, you know, it's been, what, maybe a couple months since Microsoft came out with the announcement about Bing using OpenAI's GPT 4 for its search functionalities and AI helping in all that stuff. And obviously that was such a big move for Microsoft, right? So much so when they launched it, they even used it as an anchor to pull more users in. Like, you remember when they had that wait list and they needed you to download specifically and get the app before you could even get access. Yeah. So it's been, you know, and then they opened it up for everybody. And now, you know, when you on our Windows operating system, when you just log in, the Bing usually just says, you know, use Copilot here to use AI.
So the thing is, I've missed that because I haven't been on Windows since.
So right, yeah. Okay, so it does show up and it does create some prompts for you to do that.
Right.
Now, having that, you know, such a big, quote-unquote, revolutionary thing for search, how much of it have you actually used?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think I ended up using ChatGPT more than Bing. And the reason is Bing was cool at the beginning, but then I think they just got so worried they just like completely toned it down. Just kind of is half baked now, I feel. Probably the same as you're using
ChatGPT. Yeah, exactly, same. I've just been using ChatGPT more. I don't think I've used Bing at all. Mm-hmm. Maybe once when they first opened it up. They're like, oh, you got access. Okay, let me just check. So I just checked it maybe a couple times. But because of ChatGPT's availability, I never really needed to go and use Bing. And even with my day-to-day search, I haven't really used Bing and the AI in combination, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe because if it's not intuitive enough, maybe because my habits are still kind of aligned with Google search, mm-hmm. whatever it is, it wasn't enough for me to make that switch, right? And mm-hmm. I think that was their biggest play.
Yes.
And even before the I.O., I actually wanted to say that is why I think Google will win this mm-hmm. AI race,
and
right?
I'm of the same opinion as well.
Yeah, and now that, AI, you know, after the I.O. stuff that has come out about the generative AI, and there's so much to cover, if they can really do this right, I think it will have a clear winner.
Yeah, because I think... Sorry, go on. Yeah.
No, so my final kind of question was that if we didn't have that ChatGPT access, do you think then we would have used Bing a bit more?
Probably.
Yeah,
I think so probably, too. Yeah. I think ChatGPT is just so much better.
Yeah.
So I'd like to say that with Google's I.O., this completely makes sense for them. They've been in the business of search for over a decade, that they know exactly what to do. The search results more recently have been tapering off a bit, but more often than not, they're good. They're great. The best you can ever get. So adding AI to this would be just an evolution of what they've been doing. And search is the biggest part of their company. So I think they're going to pay extra attention to this to get it right. And I think they will. I think it's going to be a new Google from here on.
Right, so for those who didn't check the I.O. announcements by Google, first of all, we were actually invited in the roundtable of generative AI by Google directly, which is basically a big Google meeting with a lot of different people where they had these announcements kind of given to us prior to the bigger announcement towards the end of the week, so we had to keep our mouth shut about a lot of these things. So we actually had access, not access, but more like we actually knew about some of these announcements way before they were announced publicly. So that was quite interesting to be a part of. But I guess just a disclaimer on that point, like none of this is, you know, sponsored or anything like that. Just for people to be to be sure of. But they obviously announced a lot of interesting things, like, you know, the Magic Editor, which is you can edit photos straight from Google Photos using, you know, the technology that they're applying. Immersive routes, I think this is for Google Maps. Other stuff like the workspace where they, you know, which basically used to be the Google Suite, I think. So workspace including Google Docs, Sheet, Drive, and all that kind of stuff would have something called the Sidekick, which seems like, you know, mm-hmm. A version of the Copilot that Microsoft was trying to use. And they'd obviously have the generative AI into all that stuff as well as search. They also have the Palm 2 using or I guess powering all this stuff. So Palm 2 is a state-of-the-art language model with improved multilingual reasoning and coding capabilities. So it's more heavily trained on multilingual text spanning more than 100 languages. They've used that for being able to let users code better. As well as so many other things, like so Bard, for example, will be more visual. One interesting example that they used in the roundtable that we were a part of was you could take a photo of, you know, you have a weekend with the kids. I think that's what the engineer explained. And it's raining outside and you don't know what to do. And they have all this random stuff lying around in, you know, the kids' drawers and wardrobes. And you take a photo of that. And Bard's supposed to give you, like, okay, you can play this with the kids, or you can, it'll give you different combinations using the images there. So I think they're going for a very visual aspect going forward. A few other things as well. For example, they were talking about being very responsible. I think they used the word responsible AI a lot more. They've used the words experimental as well, very much. I think with the responsible side of things, I'll come back in a second. But yeah, I just want your thoughts as to what you thought of the announcements with the heavily AI-focused stuff.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And basically, they've just had a fire up their bum, and then they've woken up and be like, hey, this is what we should do here, we should do, like, so I think it's good for Google in the end. And I think their stock price rose 80 something billion, I don't know if that's AUD or USD, on the news, so investors are happy as well. So I think this is a good move and the right move for Google. But I'd like to say that the thing that gave me the most hope throughout it was, I guess, their emphasis on digital tagging in one way or another, whether that's images or with text or whatever, but a way for you to know that when you're using a Google AI product, that there'll be some embedded mechanism in there to let people know that it's AI generated. And then also in Google Search, they've got this thing where if you drag and drop an image, it'll tell you, like, oh, maybe this is AI generated or et cetera. So I think safeguards like this are extremely important. And if Google does it right, I think other companies should follow. Mm-hmm. And then if that does end up happening, then the massive disaster of, like, misinformation and all of that could be curtailed by quite a bit, I think.
Like, we think it's going to go away, but I think people were still going to be like, oh, it's Google. You know what I mean? Like, they'll be the ones holding their cards.
So the arbiters of truth kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I cut you off. But yeah,
no. And that's true. I guess there's, like, an extra component where you have to trust a massive corporation now, but I don't know. Maybe if that third party stuff can be handled by someone else, I don't know. But at least it's better than nothing. That's what I'm saying. But yeah, in terms of the other stuff that they're doing with AI, I find it good. Pretty fascinating, I think, the state that we're in.
Yeah, same. I think they're taking the more, like, strategic approach, step by step, planning it out, as opposed to their first presentation, which was, you know, obviously a bit of a disaster. So compared to that, this felt a lot more intentional. I think that's the word. For them, with the responsible stuff, as you mentioned, the one thing that I still think that people will be like, oh, you know, that image is fake, or this image isn't fake. Like all that stuff being, again, going through Google itself, deciding what's, you know, fake or not fake. I think
But it's not so much they're deciding, like, okay, putting the trust thing aside for a little second. It's the fact that it would have, okay, so say you have metadata within a camera photo, right? You know, which lens it was shot on, like the exposure time, the date, time, location, etc. It's kind of that kind of stuff.
I totally agree. I totally get what you're saying. I think that should be the way.
Yes.
And it is the way. Uh-huh. But I don't think that'll be enough for the day-to-day person or random person on Facebook who usually tweets up a storm about these things to say that, oh, okay, this is okay or that isn't okay. Like, they'll still go like, oh, if you Google, if you big tech, you're all part of the same stuff, or that's misinformation, this isn't.
Okay, so what if YouTube was just to have a YouTube video playing and in the bottom corner it said this video may or may not be generated by AI?
No, I think that stuff definitely is important. I think we will get to that point. But I just feel we've been doing that anyway with the community notes. And as you mentioned in the past, that, you know, it's been doing a good job. But we've also had that, you know, during the, with Facebook, with fact checker stuff, and with so many other social media trying to add stuff. But I don't know how many people will really go around and click and really go deeper, right? At the end of the day, people just take what's at face value and just run with it. And I think psychologically, that's the biggest barrier that they have.
Maybe it'll just be a generational thing. So this is how it is now, but then future generations will always know to look. at sources and
yeah, hopefully that's the way, because I feel that there's this whole chunk of people with their inherent bias and they don't care in terms of what's thrown at them in terms of information. So
yeah.
Well, have you been keeping up with the AI girlfriend situation?
Yes, that streamer.
Yeah, so basically, for those who don't know, Carrion AI is basically an AI data bot, AI date bot that has gone viral in the past 48 hours after being featured in a Fortune article. As of yesterday, usage was up 500%, according to her, Karen Marjorie, who's basically a Snapchat star with over 1.8 million followers. And she says she's earned more than $71,000 in revenue since her May 2nd launch. And there was about 1,000 people who were willing to pay $1 a minute to virtually chat with her. She's worked with a deep fake startup called Forever Voices. And she said that she's uploaded over 2,000 hours of her content and of her voice, her personality, to become the first creator to be turned into an AI, which millions of people can now talk to all at the same time. Mm. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think it's just a symptom of the loneliness epidemic. So you have a lot of people who just want some companionship. And I did see a little video the other day about this guy who hobbled together his own AI girlfriend. So he used replica AI to be the brains and the conversational side of it. And it was going through like an Alexa smart speaker to talk. And then he had like an adult body to be the actual physical body of the girlfriend. So he was satisfied with that. And if he's doing that for some off-the-shelf generic AI companion, people that follow this girl on, Snapchat, they'll love to pay for this, as in people who are lonely enough, etc. So it could be said it's like Black Mirror Season 6 and we're living it now, but I think this is just the way. It's like that bottom rung of people that I don't know what else they'll be doing if this didn't exist, but they're going to flock towards this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like Black Mirror. Have you seen the latest? I mean, it's coming out.
I have seen the trailer, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't usually watch trailer for those. I mean, I think I mentioned it a lot in the past. I know we're going really sideways again, but did you know that trailers are actually made by a different company than the production company that makes the videos and the films?
I think I heard that quite recently, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
How recently?
Maybe about 10 minutes ago.
Before the recording or during the recording, we can't really reveal that. But that's what I knew. And I think that's why generally there was always a disconnect I felt in the past where the trailers would give out more information than was needed. I think there is still a sign-off needed from the director and producer and writers as to how much you can reveal. But it always felt to me that previously when I'd look at a trailer or a teaser, I just basically know what to expect. And I hated that feeling. Maybe as someone who likes to create, I like the element of surprise. That's why I stopped watching trailers altogether for things that I really want to be surprised by.
Yeah, I get that. But I think with Black Mirror, it's what's that kind of series called where it doesn't continue, but it's all different?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter as much. They're just different scenes. You can't really get it.
I think I overanalyze stuff. So even if I see like a random scene of, I know like what, Aaron Paul, the guy from Breaking Bad, he's in it. So it's a random scene. He's like, oh, like is that like that? You know, the shadow's coming from here. And why is he wearing that specific tank top? And it's like all this kind of stuff. Just my mind just goes crazy.
Right.
It's just probably me. It's a me thing.
Okay, interesting.
I think. But I think they're getting better with trailers. They don't reveal as much as they used to.
Okay. But yeah, so back to this. It is kind of like Black Mirror, but it's an uncomfortable world. Does it feel uncomfortable, this kind of thing?
At the end of the day, I mean, there's that argument that ultimately if these individuals are staying happy to themselves, you know, and they are satisfied with their life, they're content with their life, they're not harming someone else, it does feel like it's an okay thing, right? But at the same time, if you look at it from a societal perspective, you know, like people are lonelier, there's, you know, the birth rates is another issue, population growth in certain societies, that also becomes a different conversation for policymakers, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it just needs to have a fine balance. I think, again, technology in and of itself is not a bad thing, but how we let it control our lives is ultimately the question.
I think I'm along the same lines. I think if there's an AI companion that you could have as a friend to help you out with stuff, or maybe like if you're feeling a bit down or whatever to help you talk, but I can understand that. But if you're forming like a relationship with an AI, it kind of shows that something isn't quite right in on a societal level.
It's again, I'll just track back a little bit, right? So, and again, this is a question I had asked you way before all this AI madness, right? And this is at the start of our podcast. Is, you know, I asked you, what was your favorite band? And I think you said it was what, American Football, I think was one of the names you mentioned. And I asked you, like, what if you found out that they're entirely generated, you know? And I don't think I always used AI. I said, you know, the term, I used something like, you know, you knew that they were fake in terms of somebody else was controlling them. They were just all, you know, deep faked images and whatnot. And he said, you know, my relationship with that would change. And I think it's, at the end of the day, it's the perception that these things bring. So, for example, previously, a lot of people would have a relationship straight with, you know, like long distance relationships with individuals that they've never met in real life, right? You would have pen pals, would have, you know, years and years of
I get it.
But you know what I mean? Like, and then if it's revealed to them that, oh, you know, it's actually, you know, sometimes it'll be catfished, right? But then if it's revealed to them that it's AI, I think some people would obviously feel weird about it, but then I think a portion of people would be like, oh, that's fine if I still get to have that relationship, right? So yeah.
The thing that makes this a little different, though, I think, is the fact that they're going into this knowing that it's not real. That. And that says something that's quite profound there. It's like that they would rather talk to a robot knowing it's not real and get something out of that than people. So I don't know if you've heard of, like, I think it's called the Great Rat Experiment. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No.
Can't remember when it was done. Somewhere in the 20th century, I think, maybe even 21st, I'm not sure. But it was essentially where they just made a society of rats or mice and they gave them everything they wanted. And then they kind of all fell apart. Yeah, all fell apart, like different subsets of them fell apart into ways that we find society falling now. So some would just lick themselves in the mirror all day because they were just very, just had a lot of vanity. Others would isolate themselves and become lonely and, you know, even though they had all this stuff, they just weren't happy. I'm not sure what that has directly to do, but I see some parallels. It's kind of like we're living in this world where we have everything, but human connection is just going out the other side. And these are the kind of things that we try to fill the void with. Artificial intelligence, just stuff that isn't real but mimics that feeling. So I don't know. I can't comment to say for each individual if it's good or bad, but to me it's tracking in a way that I don't think is positive.
I think there's some truth to that for sure. I was watching this video a few days ago about how places with a lot of you know, concrete and glasses and steel doesn't stimulate our senses, you know, with the nature, right? And then you feel more compelled to spend money. You know, a lot of the American cities are like that, built in a way that's, you know, some people say it's hyper-capitalism or capitalism steroids, where everything's about just pointing you towards spending more money on food or clothing to fulfill things that you would have been fulfilled with, you know, a more connective society. So they compared the parallel with European cities, right, where there's like open areas, you know, places to walk around and cafes. And again, I haven't been to either of those places, so I can't really comment. This is straight from a video. That's my disclaimer there. But that's, again, you know, these are policies of urban planning or just general general interactions that are made by you know, policymakers that has an action in the end or as a result in the end, right? In these kind of scenarios, again, I think we are an individualistic society. The Western world definitely is. And we are pushing towards, as, you know, that you can be as individual as you want. And therefore, stuff like this will be okay. It'll be okay to be used by many individuals. So it does feel like it'll be more and more norm.
Of course, I think so. Like, and if you just look at the statistics of how many adults say they have close friends, like in the 90s versus now, completely different. And, you know, you don't blame people because it's harder to make friends nowadays. If you go up to a person and just talk to them and say, like, you know, how are you going? Whatever, they'll be like, what's wrong? Are you going to do something? Like, everyone seems to be, you know, minding their own business, looking at their phone, and if someone goes outside the norm of that, it's a bit strange. But I would argue that that's kind of more of a recent thing. Like, it didn't always used to be like
that. Yeah, and then the crazy part is, even prior to this AI, if you were looking on the phone, you were still interacting with stuff that was made by other human beings. So you still have some sort of parasocial relationship, either with, you know, other people that have done other stuff on video or with other people by messaging. But now, if everything's kind of taken over by AI, there's literally zero human connection.
Do you know something funny? Like, one of the first things I thought about in that Google I.O. thing, when they brought up the Gmail client, and it was like an AI plugin that is called Help Me Write or something like that, where it writes your whole email. And I was like, are we just going to have like AIs talking to each other?
Already, because already right now, like, I mean, Gmail does
finish your sentences. It's autofill, but you still...
Yeah, it still has to prompt it to get to a point. So I think there will be a point where it's AI talking to AI.
Yeah, like, it's like... So what are we doing here? It's like the two businesses are just talking to each other. It's like, do we need...
And then you just have like these plugins to optimize the best possible responses so you get the best possible
profit. One's reading them.
No one's reading them. Just the AI. Which is good. You can spend your, you know, time in Hawaii or something just you know, sipping pina coladas. But I think, you know, and this is interesting because, you know, we are working on a topic that's about the loneliness epidemic. Mm-hmm. And I saw the other day there was something about... what was it, like, loneliness, like, I think chronic loneliness is as bad as smoking 30 cigarettes a day or something like that. I could be wrong with those numbers specifically, but there was a parallel to smoking cigarettes as opposed to being, you know, in comparison to being lonely. And I think again, that makes just so much sense, right? And just going forward, I think we will get to that level. I mean, Japan has some case studies.
Japan's 20 years ahead.
20 years ahead. So some case studies along those lines of having companions. You know, I know a lot of men have, I think, anime-based girlfriends or something like that. Mm-hmm. I've seen, like, obviously, a Vice documentary on this ages ago, but I can just barely recall.
I think I've seen the same one.
Yeah, so things like that, for example, it's just going to be a little bit more amplified. But I don't know, man. I think at the end of the day, most humans crave other human connections. Mm. Even the introverts, you know, the high level introverts as well. And I know a few. Even they would want to have some sort of interaction at some level. But it's just,
I think it's hardwired into humans.
So. Most humans anyway. Yeah. But I don't know, if we're making a world where we're pointing the direction towards extreme individualism, then I think that's going to be a bit tricky.
We'll see.
Surprisingly, another AI topic. Are you surprised? There's another AI topic.
Surprise peek to your face.
This one's again on the more music side of things. But have you seen, Timbaland, legendary producer, for those who don't know, has made some of the biggest hits since the 90s. He recently said that he's always wanted to work with Biggie, you know, the hip hop artist who died in the 90s, again, legendary hip hop rapper. He said that, you know, I've never got a chance to work with Biggie until today, and it came out right. And then he went off to play an AI generated Biggie verse in a music that he produced on his Instagram. Mm. This came out with a lot of mixed reactions. Some people were like, oh, this is awesome. And others were like, oh, this just feels so wrong. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, this is like, you know, just feels weird.
So the thing is, sorry, just before we get to that, did he consult Biggie Smalls' family or anything? Or?
I think he'd have to eventually if he releases it as a song. I think this was...
Oh, no, but even before doing this, I mean.
I don't know. I don't think so.
It wasn't mentioned.
But then, you know, like, I think David Guetta played an Eminem, like, air-generated Eminem verse in a live concert. Mm. I mean, stuff like that has been happening already. And obviously, this, like, we talked about full-length AI stuff by artists. And we had the Drake and the Weeknd song that you covered on one of your videos. So, and there's like literally YouTube channels called the best AI songs. Right. So this is like a full-on thing. Yeah. People just making stuff. And again, I mentioned it to you, like, some of it is like really nicely done, right? And these are like producers who are just waiting on something like this. And now their imagination is just going wild, right? Yeah. But having said that, you know, this is going to be a little bit... I mean, do you have, like, music spoilers? Like, do you believe in stuff like that?
Music spoilers?
Yeah, like, if I talk about, like, an album that you haven't listened to...
I don't know.
You don't care? Mm-hmm. Okay. But for those who are into that kind of stuff like me, this is an album by Kendrick Lamar called To Pimp a Butterfly. Have you listened
heard
to that?
Of, yeah.
But have you listened to the album?
A couple of songs.
Okay, long so it's a bit of a spoiler, but essentially, if you listen to the album from the start to the end, every couple of songs, Kendrick says a couple of sentences off this poem that he wrote, right? And after every increment of the as it goes through the album, he adds more lines to that poem, you know, from the start, and basically the album reflects the poem, right? That's how he, and then the very last song he reads the poem in entirety, and then he's like, oh, you know, that's all I wrote, what do you think of this? And then on the other side, Tupac replies, has a conversation with him about the poem, and it's Tupac's voice, right? Like when you first listen to it, it's like, oh wow, that sounds like, you know, that was very crazy when you first listened to it, because it just felt like they were having a conversation. So the concept of, you know, working with deceased artists, or just having this creative decision to have people who have passed away in your creative work, or just other people that you wouldn't have access to in general, is not new. But again, what is doing it is just turn that knob to its max, and now everybody can do it, right? Kendrick probably would have had to seek, as you mentioned, like some sort of clearance from Tupac's family before he put it out. But I don't remember seeing any backlash around it. Was it because he took that clearance from his family? I don't know. But I think even if Timbaland here took the clearance from Biggie's family, there would still be a bit of backlash because it's AI.
Yeah, of course, because AI right now has this, I guess, notion and aura around it of just stealing things from people.
Yeah.
Like, you got the AI artists who are going crazy, but then this is kind of like you're stealing the voice of someone to use for your benefit. I think that's kind of where it's coming from. So it makes sense for people to be mad about it, and especially if it's a deceased person, it's that weird thing if they can't speak for themselves, yeah, to let them know if they like this or not. So yeah, I can understand it.
But what do you think will be the future going forward? Because when you covered this stuff for one of your videos, it just feels like there needs to be some sort of like a safeguard. That can you really not copyright your voice?
I don't think. Well, that's the thing. I think there's going to be precedent,
yeah,
set here for sure. Like, it's like, is the voice of Drake or The Weeknd, yeah, is that voice copyrightable? So that's going to be hard. I don't know. Like.
And I guess that's where, when Grimes said that you're going to get 50% of every time you use my voice, I think perhaps
that's the way forward.
That's the way forward,
yeah,
right?
So, yeah, that's true. But the thing is,
the value of that voice will just go down.
But the thing is, you know, a lot of scammy people could just be like, well, they use the Grimes thing, don't give any credit to her, and be like, oh, that's not Grimes. It just sounds similar to me. Yeah. But I don't know. I think, yeah, maybe that profit model could be the way forward, but it's also seems a bit messy. But then again, what can, yeah, you do?
No,
at this
sense.
Point, what can you do?
Look, one thing I just wanted to kind of get feedback from the community of listeners and viewers on YouTube. We've been posting this every Monday, and you know, obviously we're in a new studio and still working on it. There's still some issues that are coming up with frozen cameras and whatnot. Do you think it's okay if we keep posting on Monday, or if we start posting on a different day, like say on a Friday or something, or over the weekend? Do you think that would work better? Just want to hear from you guys, because a lot of people prefer, the reason why I put it on Monday, or we decided to putting it on Monday, was so that's the first day of the week people usually go for commute. They tend to listen during their commutes, and we do have a lot of people who have commented from the last week. I think someone from Perth, Dan, he says that he listens to our podcast, and this is the ideal commute length from Ellenbrook to Welshpool.
That's pretty
two common suburb names that we're accustomed to. So thanks, Dan, for tuning in. There's also people from Saudi Arabia, Mahmoud Muhiz, James Klusner from South Africa, from all around, which is incredible to see. At Arjun_CH. He's from Switzerland. It's incredible to see. At Usher got from Brisbane. Mm-hmm. He could have said hi to you last week. And someone from Sri Lanka as well. I can't seem to find that. There you go. At Iza190 is from Sri Lanka. So again, a wide variety of listeners from all around. And a lot of comments about covering some interesting stuff as well. Someone I think called at Jedi Mastop said that, are we going to cover the gaming sphere a bit more in some ways, because that's an interesting topic. At JA, Chris Holt also said that would be great to talk about someone like Isaac Arthur, who's a futurist. Have you heard of him?
Not Asimov, but...
No, not Asimov.
I don't think I've heard of him.
Yeah, and also David saying that if you can talk about EVs and the future of EVs, because they're not very suitable for Australian roads, so what's the future here? So I think quite an interesting variety of topic recommendations. We will get into all that kind of stuff in the future. We're just, I guess, getting settled in to this new space without much hiccups, hopefully, in the coming weeks.
So yeah, that just about wraps up the video for today. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening. This was a bit of a shorter video because I had a few camera issues, but we got it sorted. So yeah, see you again soon for the next one. Cheers.